And here, once more, is Lord Lawson.
I think it is very foolish of the West, and some Western countries, the United Kingdom is one of them, some Western countries are cutting back on their use of fossil fuels in order to set an example to the rest of the world. But the rest of the world is not going to follow their example. And all you're doing is crippling your own economy and also damaging the poor in your own country. So that doesn't seem to me to be a very sensible way forward. And of course, another thing that has happened is that the idea was that maybe in the not so distant future, all these other hopelessly uneconomic sources of power like wind power would become economic because the fossil fuel prices would rise. In fact, fossil fuel prices have fallen, largely as a result of the shale revolution, the development of shale gas and shale oil around the world. And I think that many countries are going to be reluctant, given the lower prices for fossil fuels, for dishing out these huge subsidies which the wind energy industry and the solar power industry requires. So it doesn't add up.
Lord Lawson, who appeared in Tom Switzer's programme Between the Lines last year. Nigel Lawson leads the Global Warming Policy Foundation, which is now accused of being favoured by the Times of London as a sort of correct line source. But what's Lawson's attitude to warming itself?
My position is very clear. Of course, I accept that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, which other things being equal, the more it's put in the atmosphere, the warmer the temperature of the planet will be, and that burning fossil fuels does this. There are a number of things which are unclear, however. First of all, the other factors which determine the temperature of the planet, it is not just carbon dioxide, that's absurd. There have been fluctuations in the temperature of the Earth over millennia, long before we were burning fossil fuels. And the other thing is how big an effect it has. And it is clear that the computer models which they've relied on grossly exaggerated, because so far this century, and that's we're now 15 years into it, which is quite a reasonable time, so far this century, although the models predicted that the temperature rise would accelerate, in fact it's more or less stopped. It's a pause, a hiatus. So it is obvious the sensitivity to this is less than they thought. So there might well be some warming, but not going to be very great. And it's nothing that we can't adapt to, quite apart from the fact that it is, as I said before, that the most important thing is to raise living standards among the desperately poor in the developing world.
So one can assume that Lord Lawson, like Matt Ridley, would call himself a lukewarmist. Now, as I mentioned in the Science Show 2 weeks ago, many other lords, led by Lord Krebs, former chair of the Science and Technology Committee in the House of Lords, have complained to the Times that that great newspaper is favouring the deniers over the real science. You may have heard John Krebs on Breakfast last week. So what's happened since? What's been the reaction to the complaint? Lord Krebs.
Well, the letter that I signed, along with 12 other members of the House of Lords, was triggered by a couple of articles in the Times, one saying global warming isn't happening, quoting an unrefereed study by a professor of statistics, and another one saying that the oceans aren't getting more acid, a report in which the author was later quoted on the web as saying the article in the Times completely misrepresented his own scientific paper. So we were triggered by those two reports to write to the editor of the Times a personal letter saying that this was unacceptable because it was part of a longer-term trend that the Times has systematically misrepresented the science of climate change. Now, it's perfectly reasonable for everybody to have their own view about what the policy should be on climate change, but the science, if you're going to report it, you should do your best at least to say what the majority of scientific opinion is, and if there's a particular article or scientific paper that disagrees with majority view, you should at least consider whether that's been properly peer-reviewed and whether claims in it are justified by the evidence. So that was the point we were making to the editor of the Times. And we were saying, look, you're undermining the credibility of your newspaper by your inaccurate reporting of science. We are experts in this area. If we don't trust what you're saying on climate science, why should we trust what you say on anything else?
Did he reply, or did you only have a letter, a long letter actually, from Matt Ridley in the paper?
I had a brief acknowledgement from John Witherow, who was not best pleased that the letter that we had sent to him was actually published in The Guardian. It wasn't meant to be published in The Times. It was meant to be a personal letter to the editor, but The Guardian had picked it up and ran a piece on it. But he didn't reply to the substance of our criticism. However, Matt Ridley, who is also a member of the House of Lords, incidentally, he is a correspondent for The Times, and he took the opportunity of his column to write a long and withering reply to our letter.
Let's just hear from Matt Ridley, because he's been on The Science Show before talking about this, and he calls himself a lukewarmist.
The first thing I should say is that I've lost some of my respect for those kind of consensus arguments since covering the acid rain story in particular, since covering a lot of the environmental scares, a lot of, you know, the swine flu, everything. Acid rain in particular turned out to be, in terms of its effect on forests in Europe and North America, lakes and things are a different point to some extent, but forests, hugely, hugely exaggerated. And I should have taken that kind of story with a much bigger pinch of salt than I did when I was covering it in the 1980s as a science journalist. So I come to the climate debate now just a little chastened by that and saying, well, okay, you say this is scary, show me the evidence. And I keep getting shown evidence that does not scare me. I keep getting shown evidence that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, yes, that we're increasing it, yes, that there will therefore be net warming, yes, but that the positive feedbacks on top of that that are being assumed, there is no evidence for. So I think we're looking at, certainly for the next few decades, just what we've had in the last few decades, which is a mild and gradual warming that will not do catastrophic harm either to human beings or to biodiversity. In fact, probably the reverse.
Well, Matt Ridley is someone who actually in his own letter did display some sort of associations. He's a member of the House of Lords on the Conservative side, that's with the capital C. And he also said he gets some income from coal mining. He owns a few coal mines, I think, in the north of England. But he's also a former student of yours, which is rather poignant. I think you supervised his doctorate.
Well, I examined his PhD thesis and I taught him when he was an undergraduate at Oxford. So it's slightly poignant that he's now an adversary in this particular area. But Matt's claim was actually, what he replied to was not the substance of our letter to the editor of the Times. Matt said that we were trying to suppress free speech, which we absolutely clearly, categorically said in our letter was not our objective. We said absolutely, in a healthy democracy, free speech is essential. But what we were criticizing was the inaccurate reporting of science. And I don't think Matt really took that on. He tried to shift the basis of the argument into one about suppression of free speech, which I just think that's misleading to say that that's what we were talking about.
He also said, and we must say that he's one of the members of the Global Warming Policy Foundation, led by Lord Lawson, that's Nigel Lawson, Nigella's dad, and a former Chancellor of the Exchequer. But he was also suggesting that they had plenty of distinguished academic scientists with them on the foundation and therefore had every right to comment about research matters just as other scientists. So they're suggesting it was not stepping outside the orthodox science, but in fact giving a caution rather than a distortion of the evidence.
Of course, the science of climate change has many uncertainties in it, but we know that 195 countries are signed up to the Paris Agreement, meaning that the governments of those countries all accept the vast majority of scientific opinion that climate change is real, that it's important, and that it's very likely man-made. And I have to say the co-signatories of the letter that I sent to the editor of the Times included two former government chief scientists, former president of the Royal Society, Lord Nick Stern, who wrote the very important Stern Review, former director general of the Met Office. So it was a group of really heavyweight people who were taking a firm stance on the accuracy of reporting of science in the Times.
You're implying that they're expert in interpreting the science, not simply that they're distinguished, but it's their job to look at the science and see what it's made of.
Precisely. They're not necessarily experts in the narrow field of climate science, but they're people who've had vast experience of interpreting scientific evidence and taking a dispassionate but informed view of what the evidence shows.
What do you think the result of this exchange has been, you know, at the moment, the public in Britain,
well,
particularly?
Well, it's hard to gauge. I've had a few poison pen emails of people saying, I had one yesterday, saying I should hang my head in shame. So clearly there are people out there who disagree with us. But what we were hoping to do was to serve a wake-up call to The Times as a newspaper. The Times is, as we said in our letter, the closest thing that we have in Britain to the newspaper of record because of its historical reputation. And it should be keen to defend that reputation and not to sully it by inaccurate and unreliable reporting.
And they do have, in the beginning of the newspaper, I think it's somewhere near the letters column, a statement that they are very, very keen to maintain accuracy and to have editorial excellence.
Yes, and clearly we're not saying that every article on climate change is inaccurate, far from it, but there's enough inaccuracy and also some, I think, bias towards reporting the views of the Global Warming Policy Foundation, which is, after all, a lobbying organisation that's been set up with unknown sources of funding specifically to present the view that climate change is not an important issue, to undermine the science and to undermine the urgency of taking action on the science.
Have you ever discussed this in the House of Lords with Nigel Lawson himself? You obviously see each other quite often.
We do. When Matt's article appeared, he said to me en passant in the corridor, excellent piece in the Times today. So our exchanges are rather cursory, but he clearly, I think, was irritated by our letter and pleased with Matt's reply.
Now, science doesn't work by plebiscite, by sheer numbers, but it does work by something called consilience. Consilience is something that goes back to William Whewell at Cambridge, where you have a great number of sources of different evidence. So it's not just computer models, it's not simply the chemistry, it's dozens of different inputs together, building up a picture of what's going on. Is this something that's been missed in this argument?
Well, I think what the articles in the Times that we criticise are doing are quoting one-off critical studies and not balancing those against what you quite correctly described as the consilience, the convergence of many different lines of evidence, whether it's changes in the Earth's atmosphere, measured changes in the global temperature, changes in sea level, melting of Arctic ice and so on. All these point to a major, major shift in the Earth's climate. And isolated studies that make a claim, which was actually not even accurately presented in the Times, don't outweigh this convergence of a huge body of evidence.
And what do you think they're up to? Why are they doing it?
Well, that's really hard for me to say, whether it's an editorial policy of the Times, it certainly seems to be that, or whether it reflects a political or ideological stance. I really can't tell what the basis of it is. But what we, those of us who signed the letter, the 13 members of the House of Lords, would like to do is to really ask John Witherow, the editor of the Times, to rethink the way he presents climate science.
And you'll find a link to the letter signed by Lord Krebs and the other Lords if you go to the Science Show website, plus a link to Lord Ridley's reply. Matt Ridley often appears in the Australian newspaper as well, as you may have noticed. And we may come back to that issue on another Science Show on another day.